The Agile Toolkit.
I'm your host, Bob Payne, and we're here with Jeff Patton, Lynn Miller, and Rebecca Werfs-Bronk. We're here at the Agile 2005 conference. And Rebecca mentioned that I really needed to talk to you guys, so I've gotten all three of you together, and we're going to talk about user-centered design and some of the challenges that you've found in applying those in Agile projects, and sort of where you think it's working, where we need to improve, sort of where we were, where we are, and maybe where we're going might be seems to be the theme for the conference. So,
okay. Do you want to take where we were?
Yeah, I can take where we were. Maybe I'll provide some context. Did you have a chance to read that, Cooper?
I did.
Did you read it?
Okay. Yes, I did. It was excellent.
So there's an article that was written right around 2001, something like that.
2002.
An article that was a discussion between Alan Cooper and Kent Beck on how user-centered design, basically they butted heads and sort of explained, you know, we came to the conclusion that doing user-centered design in an Agile context couldn't possibly work. And now it's been a few years. And folks like myself and Lynn have been doing it, so it's obviously not true that it doesn't work. I think Lynn and what they're doing at Alias is the best example, and Lynn has a practitioner report here at this conference that sort of explains exactly how they do it and how they have been doing it. You should talk about what Alias does and what you guys are doing.
Okay. So we use the user-centered design group as the customer on an Agile project, on an XP project. And we work a little differently, I guess, first of all, than a lot of usability teams work. We actually do work as interaction designers, like Cooper was talking about, where we go out and get the requirements, we do the design on those requirements, and then we do the testing of the design to make sure it works. And then finally, we give that to the developers and work very closely with the developers to try to get that design into a reality.
Mm-hmm. So risk of derailing what you're saying, so don't bookmark where you were just at, mm-hmm. but you use that D word and
yep,
for the people
design.
Using this.
Well,
yes.
I don't think it's a dirty D word.
it needs to be qualified.
Interestingly, one of the things we've seen at the conference is a lot of people talking about pulling in we've got Scott Ambler talking about Agile modeling and Agile data, and we've got folks like yourself that are talking about design. And
we're talking about
design means.
Interface design, though,
yeah.
Not modeling design or software design.
Yeah, the design of the software objects and how they interact, which is what I am specializing in or know very well. So. You know, let's talk about why Kent and Alan butted heads. They said, I mean, Kent, you know, if you think just for a minute, because I think what then Lynn can talk about, tell me about, you know, how you do things differently in your project, because Kent basically wants to start programming right away, I mean, if you're reading that, and doesn't want big upfront requirements driving, you know, because that wouldn't deliver value soon. I mean, that was basically the argument there. And they went back and forth on several different points. But he viewed it as a disconnect. He'd rather have had Alan just directly working with the developers. And there's some work that you do. I mean, that you have to figure things out.
We don't do all the design right up front. Sorry, like that huge thing that Alan was talking about.
Right.
We do the requirements up front, but those requirements aren't like the the traditional thing that they're very heavy, they're very, very light requirements, just the basics of understanding, okay, this is sort of where we want to go. And then the interface design part is done during the cycles. So it's done along with the cycles with the developers, although we're one step ahead. Like we're designing in cycle one for cycle two, for the developer cycle two, just so that we're able to do prototyping and do a lot of testing and a lot of customer input, and that customer is user customer, not XP customer,
right.
And do a lot of that in the cycle before, and then be able to hand off a proven test to the developers.
And do you do the testing in the cycle afterwards? Or?
There's two types of usability testing.
Right.
And the type that we do a lot of is at the design phase. So we're doing just enough of a design to be able to bring it to a customer and have them interact with it and tell us whether or not it works. And then once the code is there, there's a different type of usability testing.
You might want to explain the product, because I think the product that you develop has some very unique interface requirements.
Yeah, it's a 2D sketching project, and it's designed for the tablet PC, so it's designed to be used with a stylus only, so no keyboard, no buttons, nothing. And it's for artists, and so it has to feel very, very good. So we had to come up with a lot of innovative interfaces that would address the problems of dealing with just a stylus. And that's also part of our company's goal, I guess, is to come up with very innovative interfaces, new ways to tackle a problem that might already be out there, but we're doing it in a slightly better way that the customers will appreciate, and then they'll purchase our stuff. And then we can patent, too. I think we're talking about that.
Yeah, we're talking about, they invent a lot of, it takes a lot of prototyping, a lot of testing of those prototypes with users for them to come up with some really, really innovative interactions that end users have with that software, and they patent their good ideas. So, anyway, that's a good thing.
It's for our company, I guess, not our competitors.
Yeah. So I guess the interesting. Well, what's an interesting thing? So Lynn's paper discusses sort of the mechanism, how this specifically works, and the idea that there is pretty rigorous, very rigorous, almost daily involvement with end users, which you see as your customers, which are your customers, to come up with the design of the stuff. That sort of gel design feeds forward into an iterative development cycle, and then what comes out of the iterative development cycle gets hit with some additional usability testing to validate that stuff.
Yeah.
And changes, I suspect there'll be changes or issues sometimes that come out of that testing.
Small ones, yeah.
Small ones.
Yeah.
So
can you feed those back into the development cycles?
We feed them back into development cycles.
Yeah.
And even when we go out, we'll get features that people ask for, and then we can bring that back to the team and say, okay, we've discovered that people really want this capability. Is this more important than one of the ones we've already put on the board and that we've already prioritized? And we can say, no, it isn't. It has nothing to do with this goal. Throw it away. Or, yeah, actually, this is really cool. Let's put it in. Yeah. So we are able to bring that back into the cycle as well. Basically, our role is to translate from our external customers, like our users, to the product team.
So one thing we were talking about earlier amongst ourselves before we had this conversation here was that, Lynn, you used to be a developer,
yes.
Right? And the developer's mindset versus the interface design mindset is slightly different. And you view that if you were programming and figuring out the interaction design that you wanted, at the same time, you might not come to exactly what the user might want. You'd be thinking about, how do I optimize it in the program?
You think about the implementation problems. We found that with a few of the people on our team that both do development and interaction design. If they try to do it both at the same time, I'm going to be developing this and also designing this, interface designing this, then the design changes because they're thinking about, okay, how can I implement this? And how can I implement this in the easiest way? So the design changes a little bit, and then somebody else will come over and catch them on it. And say, wait a minute, why are you doing this? This is three extra steps. Why are you doing this?
So there's a little tension there between, the programmer's mind, shall you say, and the design of an optimized, simple program versus the usability, user experience design. And, if you didn't have what you group did and you were integrated in with the team, do you think you'd come up? I mean, how would that work?
Oh, we know we wouldn't come up with the same things, because when we started out the product and we'd talk about these capabilities we want, the developers would often come up with a solution at that point. And that solution almost never was a solution that we finally came up with. Mm-hmm. So they'd say, okay, I will put a dialog box in for that, and that'll take 3 days. And then we come up with a solution that that would work better for the users because they've got the stylus and they have to be interactive. And it wouldn't take 3 days. It would take longer. It would be a different solution.
So you'd probably do a little more experimentation that you'd throw away if you had that approach.
Yeah. Yeah, we do a lot of experiment. Of course, we do have a developer intern on our staff, on the usability team staff, mm-hmm. that can do all this prototyping for us if we have to go into code to look at interactions.
So you actually, a lot of these prototypes get thrown away? Or
a lot of them, yeah. Well, actually, all of the prototypes are thrown away at the end, right? Definitely the whiteboard and the paper prototypes.
Right, that's right. the post-it prototypes, yeah.
But even the code ones, they are created so that they are just the minimum we can possibly do and the worst code possible, really,
right.
just to get the concept across so we can test whether or not we're going in the right direction. Because we might have 4 ideas of how we could solve this problem, and we need to sort of test it, see how it's working with the user, mm-hmm. and then throw out 3 of them and start to dive in on that last one.
I think Kent Beck calls that failing early.
Yes.
Try a lot of things and then...
Yes, very much so. But yeah. But on the interface design side.
Right.
So it's separating that out from the actual development of production code. So you're overlapping between that.
Yeah, we can do it simultaneously. We're working on these things for the next version, and then the developers are working on the current iteration with the last set of designs that we've given them. And the fact that we have verified the designs with the customers, that we've actually done these tests and gone through this, means that at the end we have a design we know works and we also know it's complete.
Right.
So when we do hand it off to developers, now they have a big task of getting, this idea that we have into code so it actually works. It's, it's not trivial. But at least they know this is going to work.
Right.
At the end of all that time, when I actually finish this thing's going to work and our customer's going to be happy with it, as opposed to us saying, okay, well, actually, that didn't work. So let's throw that out and try again.
Do you ever try to bring in the concept of the cost or the estimate?
That is always in there, yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, we have our product and our company hat on.
So you participate in their planning
yes.
of their feet, you're prioritizing the what you
we prioritize based on the customer. They prioritize based on the risk of the development, and then we kind of merge those two and come up with a what's going to work for us.
So so there's no hostility between these teams and their different priorities. I mean, that's what I think is kind of unique. People at this conference are talking about getting customers to listen to you or getting people to play well together, on the other side, the customer side versus mm-hmm. the development side. And here they have a really kind of a streamlined, very collaborative, but you know what you're doing kind of role in this product, which is pretty neat.
Well, I mean, I've actually had, luckily enough, I've found that quite often the customer side, if they're, of course, it's sort of a little self-serving, but if they're sort of bright and they get the control that they now have over the product, a lot of the customers, I think, really like getting involved in planning. Not clearly not everyone, but it's good for you that
it's really good for us. I'm just saying, these guys. I didn't realize I was a customer.
It wasn't in the XP terms.
I was very confused because
it's taken Lynn a couple days to actually figure out this crazy customer they were talking about was her.
Yeah.
Because they got along so well.
There's a lot of stress about that relationship.
Right.
With the customer, and so she probably didn't recognize herself at all in what they were talking about.
Right.
So why do you think that is on other teams? I mean, what's unique about your company that?
We are creating like shrink wrap type of products. We're not creating contract or IT products, and I think that is a different relationship there. We're working. Like, my group is working to make my company successful. The developers are working to make the company successful. We're all working in the same direction.
Right.
Right. There's no tension about how much money is being used on this or something, because we're all trying to save money. We're all trying to do the best thing for the company and be proud of what we're doing.
And do you have a lot of other products, or is
this is actually the smallest product. It was
It
was the easiest one to talk about for my paper, and also. It started just as Agile started in our company. Jim Highsmith came in and taught us how to do Agile, basically, in the company. And this was the first project that started that way.
That's certainly not a bad first intro.
Mm-hmm. I wonder if I can jump in and offer a hypothesis. There's a lot of companies. You know, I'm a champion for using user-centered design approaches as a mm-hmm. method of eliciting, gathering, gelling requirements into a design that finally lands into developers' laps to actually build. You know, we were chatting yesterday, and one of the things that popped out yesterday is how often do things change after you get them to the developers? And mm-hmm. I thought I heard you say not that often.
Very, very, not often at all.
Okay. Yeah. So a lot of times when I hear about tension between customers and development groups, it's a lot of the times that the customers don't know what they want. The customers keep changing their minds. The customers are sort of upset about how much things cost. And I'm not hearing a lot of that stuff there. And so I'll make a bold assertion that having a strong design, recognizing what you're doing in a customer role is design, and having a strong design process helps that a lot. You're clear on what you want. You know it's why you want. They have some respect and appreciation for how you arrived at that decision.
Yes.
They build it. You guys collaborate effectively. You validate it. It mostly comes out fairly clean when you validate it. And you know when, and they know when then there is feedback or there is change on something that they've already built. First off, it doesn't happen that frequently, and it's pretty strong. So I guess I'll make a bold assertion that having a sort of a sloppy design process on the back of a really effective development process is sort of a root of some tension.
So again, you're using that D word.
I'm using that D word.
We should talk about that because that's a really interesting.
We were talking yesterday about we're all sitting here and we're all designers, but we all sort of do something different.
Lynn
focuses very much on interaction design for very complex user interactions. I mostly do user-centered design and development on mostly business applications. And Rebecca does
software design on many different kinds of level.
So,
yeah.
And we all call ourselves designers, but...
Which is kind of confusing, but the actual point about which we do share in common values, which I think is why we, you know, why I found this what Lynn was doing very interesting, is that oftentimes people come in as the customer role, not realizing how much responsibility they may want to take or should take.
Yes.
And you're actually, you know, Lynn, you're and Jeff, because of your background, are skilled in figuring out, you know, the value. I mean, user-centered design is a skill. I mean, it's a set of competencies that you have to build up. And, you know, when I go out to places where the customer to an XP product doesn't know what they're doing, it might be because they have a business knowledge and they don't, you know, they're a business expert, but they're not... you know, how should this system be? And so in some sense, creating a product that is, you know, that has these features that you want is quite easier than saying, oh, there's this complex IT process that we kind of have to figure out what we have to computerize. And I'm an expert in accounting, not in accounting software.
Yeah, it always surprises me how much we expect our domain experts to be software designers.
Right.
And again, back to recognizing them as designers, not as requirements, you know, people or you know, people who donate requirements to the projects. And it's, you know, the people listening to this can't read it, but I still love that Tim Lister slide that keeps coming up in presentations. I've got a nice shiny requirement. I think I'll bring it back to the office.
Yeah,
the idea that you could just pick up
the idea that you could just pick up and harvest
requirements and bring them back, and then people would build that. It sort of doesn't work that way. It's a skill. It's a set of skills that people learn.
Right. And I think the early tension came not in that. I'll sort of go out on a limb here because I can't speak for most of the people that came up with. The agile methodologies, but in speaking with them over the years, the thing that always struck me is they always knew that design was absolutely important, but they wanted to try to diffuse the idea that everything needed to be known up front before you actually start getting feedback on the actual product as it's developed.
So Lynn breaks her design into release or sprints, sprint cycles too, and just so that people listening here know about it. How long are your sprint cycles? Are 1 month or roughly?
We have 2 week iterations.
2 week iterations.
Yeah. And I know I've just heard also that there's iterations and then there's internal releases, I guess. And we actually release every 2 weeks, so our 2 week iteration is also the release.
Interesting. So that's great.
So she's doing.
Yeah.
You're not doing big upfront work. But you did do some goal setting before you started.
A lot of goal setting so that everybody is, you know, have a common understanding of what we're trying to achieve, and that we'll be able to make decisions when something comes up. We can say, okay,
how does this tie to the goal?
Yeah, does this match the goal? If it doesn't, well, then we don't do that, or that's a lower priority.
It's just nice listening to Lynn talk, because I've talked to a lot of usability people who can explain to me in extreme detail how what she does is impossible. So
proving the impossible
exactly.
can be done.
Well, that's actually one of the problems that we are having, is that there are usability people out there who aren't very good. Like, they're fighting this. And Jeff and I were just at the Usability Professionals Association, and you talk to people who don't want to change. They don't want to become agile. And if an agile group is working with a group like that, yeah, there's going to be tension.
Yeah. I mean, in speaking with Scott Ambler, I mean, he's having the same issues with the modeling group or the, you know, the database mm-hmm. group. And clearly, I mean, in speaking with him, I mean, this very much ties in with what you're bringing to the table, is saying, look, these are really good practices. How do we make them iterative, incremental, and how do we start seeing the end product to get feedback? And you're actually getting feedback from your direct customers, which I think is really fantastic.
Yeah, very frequently and very iteratively. They're very rigorous at how they do that. Much more so than most XP projects I've seen.
Yeah.
They're getting more frequent, stronger customer feedback than, you know, a lot of people claiming to do pretty agile, iterative stuff. So
that really says that perhaps the real thing to deal with is that, you know, that idea of customer as designer of their usage experience requirements is, you know, user-centered design takes that to the, you know, the max, is something that would really help clarify in other XP projects that role needs to be there. I mean, how are you going to get that word out to people other than, I mean, because I think that when we take Joe from accounting in to be the captive customer on an XP product, he doesn't have the skills that you have, Jeff or Lynn. What are you going to do? I mean,
but if that product had a usability person between this guy and the developers, then they could translate. They could talk to him and pull out his understanding, even though he doesn't, you know, understand software.
Sure, they could. And we were talking about this that, you know, if I'm selling some big software product where, I mean, your company is pretty unique in that the usage experience is really what sells the product. But if I'm selling an accounting package to somebody else, you know, does it matter that someone stumbles over a poor user interface? So, I mean, the values there are driving what you've done, right?
Right. And I think that probably also gets back to the way, I mean, if you look at the beginnings of at least XP, mm-hmm. You know, a lot of the practices, you know, Kent and Ward were using in Tektronix with embedded software. And then they moved on to an accounting system. I don't want to discount the usability of an accounting system, because certainly those things can be very serious differentiators in selling a product. But they're not nearly as important. If you get a great interface and you no longer have, you know, GAAP certified, you know, auditing in the system, I mean, you know, you might be in trouble, but certainly, you know, and maybe the lesson is we need to take a look at the product we're building and build teams with the skill sets in the practices that we need to, or believe we need to deliver those.
And I think that user-centered design principles are very compatible with, you know, software design principles of good design, you know, design for use, design for simplicity, design for, you know, function, it meets my function. So I actually believe that these user-centered design people should be telling those XP teams that can afford someone like you, how they should be interacting with the customer to help make those bridges.
Let me see if I can do a minor rant without going on too long. But I think you started to point at value systems. When we're doing user-centered design, we're fairly passionate about building software that's appropriate for its use, appropriate for the people who are using it. And I don't think anybody would disagree with wanting to do that.
And developers want to do that.
It's just, but sometimes they lack tactics for specifically how they go about doing that. So I'm a developer and I'm a user-centered designer, and I share this sort of this value system that sort of drives me to do both. And had a better connection to this in my head, but I started doing user-centered design because I was trying to figure out some specific tactics for doing this. How could I somewhat repeatably make the user interface design? How could it be a little less subjective than it seems to be?
Right.
And I started learning how to build user role models and how to build some task models and how to validate the user interface I was coming up with against those types of things. So I'm a developer and I do test-driven development, and I write a unit test and then I write an object and the test runs green. And when I first started really doing it test first, a little part in the back of my brain would light up and be tingly and I'd be happy because I thought about it and it worked and it was what I thought it was and I had something to validate it against. When I do UCD stuff, the same little part in my brain lights up and tingles because when I have a good user interface, I know something about the user and the context of use and what they're trying to do. It's more of a subjective test. I don't get a green bar, but the little green place in the back of my head still lights up. And to me, that these are very comparable things and very comparable ideas. So it seems crazy for me people build software without. For me, people that build software without caring about the user who's using it and their goals are a lot like developers who insist on writing code without unit tests. It's the same kind of bad behavior my mind.
This is Jeff's passion.
I'll kick the soapbox aside.
but you've been trying to do user-centered design in a natural way.
Yes.
And low fidelity kinds of ways.
Yes.
And ways that aren't, I'm going to say, require extensive training to at least become a novice at trying to think about. Would you say that? I mean, are you trying to get, when you run groups through or do user-centered design with people, do they need you in the room all the time, or can they learn these techniques and apply them?
For better or worse, it is a lot the same as test-driven development. You can't sit down and show someone JUnit and do test-driven development in an afternoon. Right. Well, you can show them and they'll sort of get it, but all of us who have really gotten it know that it takes practice, and it sometimes takes weeks and months or even longer to really have it click in. So, I'm sorry to say, there's some techniques I can show you and you'll get it, and I think your head and heart might be in the right place and that'll help you get it faster, but it takes practice. So that's it. So
fair enough.
Yeah. But yes, you can get it, and people, you can leave the room, just as I eventually, as thick as my head is, got unit testing without the people that taught me in the room. So anyway.
Well, great. I don't know if anybody has any closing thoughts.
I got all mine out.
Okay. What about you, Lynn?
I guess just that user-centered design can work with Agile, and it's a really good fit. And we have been able to prove that, even though the Kent Cooper thing said it was impossible.
Was impossible, yeah.
Yeah, that's kind of cool, yeah.
And do you have your experience papers or links to things that you would find?
Well, the experience paper is in the conference proceedings.
Okay, and are those going to be generally online to the general public?
Yeah, they are. Yeah.
Okay, so
I think both of our names are Googleable to find. Will be Googleable to find a lot of the stuff that we're talking about.
Google Jeff Patton or Lynn Miller.
Yeah.
There's a lot of Lynn Millers.
right.
Okay. Well, thank you very much.
Thank you.
Thank you.
And have a great conference.